Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high-quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby! Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
I'm NFL linebacker TJ Watt, and this is my personal best. YPB by Abercrombie is the activewear I'm always wearing. That's why I reached out to co-design their latest drop. I worked with designers to create high-performance activewear that holds up to my toughest workouts. Shop YPB by Abercrombie in-store, online, and in the app. Because your personal best is greater than anything.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone!
Swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, boy! Welcome back to Plate Tessie episode 270. It's the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Remember to hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on WEI's YouTube channel. Hit the thumbs up button on all our videos in the Play Tessie playlist there. And you can subscribe to WEI on that YouTube. Find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm here with Sammy. I'm here with Pat. And the regular season, 162 games, officially over, which is crazy. Because like the last few years when 162 games ended, it was a solemn, you know, this was the season. And we're moving on, and like, here's how we think they can get better, and we'll wait and see what they say at the end of season press conferences. Complete opposite now, because obviously the Red Sox are in the postseason, and just to we were trying to figure out when we were going to record this show, because Joe was at the Red Sox game, Pat was at the Patriots game, and we were talking about, oh, do we do it early? Do we do it late? And like initially it was like, oh, maybe we do it early, but then Pat was at Gillette and he had the delayed parking, and Joe was at Fenway and the Red Sox game started 2 hours after the Patriots. And it was like, okay, we're going to do it late. And I'm glad that we did it late, because my thoughts earlier in the day after the Red Sox won their game and the Blue Jays were up 1-0 and it was clear it was going to be Red Sox Yankees, my thoughts were just all over the place. Like, I could not put together a real thought, a real take, a real... And to be honest with you, I still am just all over the place. So I'm really hoping that this podcast can kind of like help me put my thoughts together, put my opinions together into one place, because I'm so excited that this team is going to the postseason. That said, like, the way that this postseason is structured, they could go to Yankee Stadium, lose 2 games, and not play another game at Fenway Park. So from that point of view, it is nerve-wracking a little bit. But before we get going, before we talk about the Yankee series, so Sammy and I were at Fenway Park for the Red Sox clincher. We got to go on the field after. And Sammy talked about it on the radio the next day with Bradford, but it was like just one of the nights of our lives. And it was fucking amazing. And I was really sad that Pat couldn't be there, but Pat also didn't get a chance to talk about the Red Sox making the postseason, which Sammy and I dropped a 10-minute mini bonus episode live from the field about that. But Pat, I got it. You haven't spoke. You weren't on the radio the next day. Like, the Red Sox made the postseason. I know you had your doubts at points in time, and I know that the last episode you claimed you were worried, but I think you knew, and you said it too. It's like, you know, the math was there. You know they're probably going to make it, but at the same time, you're scared shitless until it happens. Well, it happened. Now that they're there, how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, going into the Detroit series, it was cautiously optimistic, which I feel like is an over exaggeration, because it, not that it was ever really in doubt, but it was just that slim chance that it wouldn't happen that really was nagging at me. The good thing is it happened. Dude, I felt so bad for my girlfriend's family. So long story short, I was not at the game on Friday because I was at a family vacation with my girlfriend's family. That being said, I was checking the score pretty much the whole time, whatever. Game ends. I'm elated. I'm incredibly happy. We're all sitting at the table playing like drinking games, doing blah, 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 whatever. Then I get an onslaught of texts from Sammy and Gordo. The social media starts to blow up. I see Sammy and Gordo with Derek White. I see them on the pitcher's mound. I see them taking videos of all the guys coming out of the dugout. And it was, and this is not an exaggeration, and I think this will not be an exaggeration for the next 50 years of my life, the single biggest case of FOMO I've ever had in my life, to the point where I just shut down on this vacation.
Oh,
like my girlfriend's sister asked my girlfriend if I was okay, and she had to awkwardly be like, yeah, the Red Sox won. And she was like, shouldn't he be happy? My girlfriend like explained the circumstances. But yeah, no, it sucked. Happy I went. 10 times out of 10, would still pick to go to the vacation, obviously. But the FOMO was so real. And then like, I'm like on the cusp of getting over it. Like the pictures have stopped and like there's a lull, and I'm like, okay. I was like, wow, man, that sucked. And then I refresh Twitter and I see a tweet from Sammy that says, top five night of my life.
Sorry.
And I go,
I was drinking.
There's no way. Quite literally, this is not an exaggeration. Less than 2 minutes later, Gordo texts us. I cannot believe we get to do this. Love you guys. I go, I'm gonna kill myself. Like, I'm like, this is terrible. This is my worst nightmare. Okay,
hold on. I said to Gordo, like Gordo, and Gordo can vouch. There were like 2-3 times where I said, I feel so guilty sending these things to Pat and Joe because they're not here. Like, I don't know how I credit you for being, you handled it well, like from our perspective. But I, trust me, I was thinking about that the entire time. It was in the back of my mind. I felt really bad. Like, yeah, I wish all four of us were there. Swear, I felt terrible.
By the way, hold on. The context behind the "I can't believe we get to do this" text was not in regards to the get to go on the field and like be a part of the celebration, whatever.
Oh yeah,
it was about the whole body of everything we get to do all throughout the year. But
yeah,
I truly can't believe what we get to do. I really feel so lucky that all of us get to do these things.
And then like my big, not even my big thing, but like, I was genuinely so like fucking happy that you guys got to be there. Obviously, I would have liked to be there too, and I'm sure Joe would say the same thing. But that being said, like, awesome. And the other thing too is like, in Gordo, you kind of like planted the seed. It's like, this is ideally one of many like scenarios, situation, like all this stuff. So I look forward to it. But brother, Friday night blew ass. It was so bad.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is, like, it's the first time the Red Sox have made the postseason in 4 years. And it was super, super special to be essentially like a fly on the wall in the celebration, is, I guess, a good way to put it. Like, the dudes on the team that we know better, it was really cool to like give those guys hugs and like the freaking champagne and beer all over their shirts, it like stinks you up a little bit too. But at the same time, like, even though this is the first time in 4 years, yeah, it's what Pat said. Like, I texted this in the group chat. Like, there's a chance that like a week and a half from now, we're doing the same exact thing, except all of us are there. And if not, this is the first year of this potential window of Red Sox baseball that we hope is a long one, where hopefully there's going to be a lot of these, a lot of clinchers at home, hopefully, and chances for us to do these things again. And yeah, I mean, it was a super awesome night, but it won't be the last clincher that they have. That's for sure. Agreed. Hopefully it's not the last clincher they have this year at Fenway. Because even if they make it through the Yankees, it's too bad that one would be at Yankee Stadium. But then they could go play the Blue Jays and clinch at Fenway, hopefully. But Sammy, top, just before we move on to the Yankees series, because obviously we got to spend the majority of the show on the Yankees series. But let's, from your perspective, like, highlight or two from that night, not the game, talking purely post-game.
Okay, I'm trying to think. I gotta be careful.
Yeah.
Derek Lowe was really cool. I didn't know he was gonna be there at all. They showed him on the Jumbotron. He was in the Legends suite, I believe. And then he was in the celebration after the game, and he was one of my favorites growing up. I remember getting yelled at by my little league coach because, like, this was little league, so I was very young, but every time I would throw a strike, I would do his fist pump thing. And my coach had to be like, "Hey, Sam, don't do that every pitch. It's not okay." And I'm like, "Oh, sorry. I really like Derek Lowe's." You know what I'm talking about? This thing where he like does the bottom to the top fist pump.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I spoke to Yoshida for the first time, very briefly. Just said, "Congratulations, Masa." And he said, "Thank you very much." And then I gave him a fist bump. And he had very soft skin.
That was really funny from my perspective, because like, I think we were talking to Pete Fatsy's brother and dad at the time, and you run over and you go, "I just talked to Yoshida." It was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And you guys know me. I've always been a huge Yoshida guy, a huge believer in Yoshida. Never said a bad thing. Did not say anything about they should DFA him or anything. So this was just me meeting my guy, if you think about it.
So yes, Derek Lowe, he might have been having the best time out of anybody there, to put it that way. He was having a lot of fun, and that was fun with him. But I'll tell you, for me, I think so. We recorded the show that we posted. Like, we basically got on the field and immediately set up and recorded. And the players, like, none of them, when by the time we started, had come out of the dugout yet. So they were all still in the clubhouse doing what they were doing in there. And so we recorded that thing. We hadn't had like our night at that point. When we were done recording that, we put the equipment away and we walked over. And we didn't really exactly know what to do with ourselves, because it's like, where do you stand? Where do you go? Like, who are you supposed to talk to? What's out of line? Like, we don't know anything. And then from like the right side, I just hear, "Gordo!" And I look over and it's Zach Kelly. And I was like, thank God. Like, here, okay, we're good. Like, we can just like be free, because like everyone is just out there having a good time. Like, we don't need to be buttoned up. Like, we're happy and we're allowed to be happy. And I think that was what was great about it, is like, obviously, when you're there before the games, the players are preparing to go and play a game, and you have to be respectful of that. While at the same time, it's like, you want to talk to guys either for the purposes of content or just because you want to talk to the guys. In this scenario, like, everyone, obviously, like, they're multiple drinks in, a lot of them. And even if they're not, everyone's just thrilled that 162 games or 160 games at that point, and they've accomplished their first goal, which is to make the postseason, and they're allowed to celebrate that, be happy about it. And I'm glad that just like, you could be happy about that with them. And that was really cool. But anything else on this before we move to the Yankee series? Pat, you got something?
Yeah. So from my end, game ends. We're all kind of texting each other, like, playoffs, like, blah, 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 whatever. So then I think I texted and I said something along the lines of like, "Are you guys hanging out, or like, have you talked to anybody?" It was something like super like, "Oh, like, what do you guys, basically, what are you guys doing?" Nothing. No text. No. 10 minutes later, I get a fucking selfie of Gordo, Sammy, and Derek White.
That was funny. So Sammy and I were out there, and like, I'm trying to figure out, is it appropriate to do this? And I was like, you know, fuck it. It's Derek White. He's wearing a Sox clinch. Like, let's just ask him.
We've never, we've never asked for a picture one single time with anybody on the field.
Yeah, never.
In 2 years, not one time we have ever.
Casey Affleck, nobody.
It's a no-no. You don't do that. It's normally a no-no, but circumstances.
Pat, I was right there with you because after that selfie and you said, how are you guys doing? That was 10 minutes after, and it took 20 minutes for Sammy just to say, this is wild, and Gordo saying, never seen a man drunker than Derek Lowe.
He was feeling it.
Yeah, he was having a good time.
By the way, Pat, you want to get tickets to Super Bowl 60 and try and get field passes and not include these guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to have our own fun without them.
That sounds lovely. So you guys maybe we'll hoist the Stanley Cup and not invite them.
You guys got to go to find the bar where the next champion, where whoever wins the World Series, fly out wherever that game is taking place, find the bar that they're a part of and get into their little rope access and start hoisting trophies.
No, I'm going to get Pat on a duck boat. We're going to force our way onto a duck boat after they go on this magical run and win the World Series.
Yeah, I got some connections.
Yeah, and this is coming from the guy who called them done about a month ago.
I called them done like four times, Joe.
Yeah.
I love baseball, dude. I love this season. I love the ups and downs. And I guess that's a good transition into this mountain of a series that we've got in front of us. That's only a best of three series, but like. Newsflash, if you live under a rock, the Sox are going to the Bronx to play a best of three series against the New York motherfucking Yankees, which, yeah, in my lifetime, I've seen the Red Sox play the Yankees. My first baseball memory is the Aaron Boone walk-off home run in 2003. The Yankees beat the Red Sox in 2003, but since then, the Red Sox obviously came back and beat them in 2004. Long time without facing them. They beat him in 18 in the division series. They beat him in 21 in the wild card game. And now this whole new iteration, three games in Yankee Stadium. And to be honest with you guys, like give me guidance here because I truly do not know where to begin. I actually do not know where to begin. And I guess maybe my main take, the main thought that I have concretely come together with is that the Red Sox are not going to take this series unless they take game one. Is that a crazy thought? They have to win the crochet game.
Yeah, I mean, not technically, but you're not going to feel good at all if they lose that crochet start. That's their best shot by a mile. I don't even think that's at all controversial. I will feel sick if they lose the first game. Obviously not over, but back against the wall in the strongest way. You got to win two in a row, Yankee Stadium, without your ace. That would be tough. So, yes, got to win game one.
Maybe what I said is an exaggeration, but that's the path. Like, if you want to, like, let's be honest with ourselves here. The Red Sox are going to Yankee Stadium without Roman Anthony, they've got injuries all across the roster. And obviously, Roman Anthony is the pinnacle of those. But you're trying to go in there and beat the Yankees, who are playing really good baseball, while the Red Sox, since Roman Anthony went down, have played okay baseball. Okay. So the path is winning the crochet game and then seeing what happens in the next two. It's not that they can't, but like that is the path. Pat, am I wrong there?
No. I mean, if you have any hope to win the series, you have to win game one. You cannot waste the crochet day. I would go as far as to say if they lose the crochet game, if they lose game one, I put the odds the Yankees winning like over 85-90%. Like, that's how important the crochet game is. They can throw Fried, they can throw Rodon, they can throw Schlittler, they can throw whoever they want. Crochet is the best pitcher in this series. If you waste that game, you're fucked. Point blank.
It's if you want to, and like, obviously, everything that we say on this show comes with the caveat of this is the MLB playoffs. We have seen way more crazy things happen than we've seen chalk, right? Like, you do not know what's going to happen in the playoffs. But that said, you look at how the Yankees and the Red Sox stack up, and yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle. Like, the Yankees, in my opinion, with the iteration that you're seeing right now, have the better lineup than the Red Sox, especially since the Red Sox, and we'll talk about this later in the show, you're going to be facing Max Fried and Carlos Rodon, two lefties in the first two games. Like, that's not going to be the lineup that you've been seeing. Like, the Red Sox have been facing some right-handed pitching. It's going to be the lefty lineup, which looks a little bit different. I think the Yankees have the advantage in the lineup. I think they both have really strong bullpens. I think the Red Sox have the starting pitcher advantage in game one, and I think the Yankees have the starting pitcher advantage in games two and three. So, and if you want to bring management into it, I think the Red Sox have a steep advantage in the manager and how the games are going to get managed from a staff perspective. You got Cora, who's built for these, versus Aaron Boone. But out of everything I laid out just there, plus the fact that it's all happening at Yankee Stadium, the Yankees have the advantage on paper. But obviously these series are not played on paper, and it's baseball and it's the playoffs and anything can happen. But you're going to have to do a lot of things right to beat this team.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't even know if I'd call it an uphill battle. I feel like this is a pretty even matchup. You look at, we're not doing our predictions yet, are we? Because just jump right into it, but I'm...
You can imply it, but save your official prediction until the end. Imply whatever you want.
I just think this is way closer than a lot of people think. I understand the Yankees are the favorite, as they should be. They have home field advantage. They have probably the best player overall in the series with Judge. Red Sox, sure, they have the best pitcher, but you can't... I mean, Judge is playing in every game. Crochet, you only got one, so... I do think that a three-game series for the Red Sox is the easier path to beat the Yankees because of Crochet. You beat them the first time, and then you just got to win one of two. If it were a best of seven, I think their rotation, the top three, comparable, but overall, they just have more depth, and I think the Yankees bullpen has more depth too. So I'd prefer to face the Yankees in a short series. That's why I was pining for, I hope they get the Yankees, because in my head, you got to get through them at some point. Get them early. That's the easiest to do it. Again, mostly saying this because you have Garrett Crochet, and that is the biggest ace in your hand if you're the Red Sox. So not going to be easy. I think that this is where Alex Cora shows why he's so vastly superior to Aaron Boone. And by the way, that's not a Red Sox fan take. I think every single Yankees fan alive would say Alex Cora is a better manager than Aaron Boone, who is not very loved by Yankees fans. Kind of 50-50 in my experience. Some of them tolerate him. I've never met a Yankees fan who's like, dude, I fucking love Aaron Boone, bro. Gabagool. So it'll be fun, man. This is what we live for. I don't want to play the Guardians, boring. Blue Jays, not as exciting. Tigers, snooze fest. Give me the friggin' Yankees in the Bronx. Put them down in their own home, just like you did in 2018.
I mean, my whole thing is, basically, the way I look at it is, if you win the Crochet game, if you win game one, you need one of Giolito or Bayo to show up. The chances either one showing up are decent. I won't call them great because neither have looked necessarily great the last month or so. But if you win game one, you at least give yourself a very good chance of winning the series. If you do not win game one, you're basically just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks at that point. Because if Bayo starts to struggle, the second Bayo starts to struggle, you're talking, you're going early, you're going totally, you're just emptying the clip in game two. And then game three is an absolute just crapshoot. Like, you cannot put yourself, aside from a game three, in a must win. Like, game one is an absolute must win. And I get it, it's playoff baseball. Anything can happen. Rodon could come out game two and just suck. Like, it's possible. I understand that. That being said, to put yourself in a must-win in game two totally and completely, utterly fucks you in game three.
Yeah. Point blank. No, it makes it exponentially more difficult, because if you got to manage game two as a must-win, think about, and obviously all these games are going to be managed as must-wins, but there's different tiers of aggressiveness. Look at what Cora did in the first game of the Tiger series when he got Kyle Harrison out of there. And I think that when he would come in to pull Kyle Harrison or whoever the starter in any of these games is, like if it's Bayo or Giolito or whoever, depends on what the series score is. But let's say the guy gets yanked in the fourth. I feel like Cora has tipped his hand a little bit.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here and that Justin Slayton is going to come in to be the fireman to get out of a sticky situation, try to get some strikeouts, get you through that difficult inning, and then you can kind of go to your sort of lower leverage guys if you need length. Maybe if you're ahead in the series, you can do that. Or if you're up 1-0 in the series and you're down 6-0, like, yeah, that's when you go to whoever the long man is. But if they're down 3-0, like, yeah, they're going to do what they did on Friday. They're going to go to Slayton, and then they're going to go to Mats, and then they're going to go to Weiser, and then until you can finally get to the eighth and ninth, and maybe even they stretch Whitlock for two, or maybe they even go to a starter. Who knows? Maybe Connelly Early's available out of the bullpen in the series. Maybe Kyle Harrison, maybe Peyton Tolley. Like, we don't know. We should talk about the roster, but the way they manage this thing is going to be different than any game you've seen all year, maybe save for Friday.
Eczema isn't always obvious, but it's real. And so is the relief from Ebglyss. After an initial dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Searching for real relief? Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILLY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans, send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th, and never miss a meme or milestone, all protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels and music are made for each other. They share a rhythm in the craft of making something timeless, while being a part of legendary nights. From backyard jams to sold-out arenas, there's a song in every toast. Please drink responsibly. Responsibility.org. Jack Daniels and Old No. 7 are registered trademarks. Tennessee Whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume. Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. I got a question. This is kind of a weird niche thing, but this has just been in my head. Do you guys think Connor Wong is going to start game two with Bayo? Because yes, I do.
100%.
And that's just, yeah, like, not it's even so strange, isn't it? Yeah. Right. Okay, good. We're all on the same page. It's just like, holy crap. After the season he had, he's going to be in the playoff lineup. And all three of us are like, yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Easy. He's literally caught every Bayo game for like 4 months.
Is it the strangest sport ever?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Like, the guy has been one of the worst hitters on the planet. And all three of us, again, are like, you got to start him in game two, which might be an elimination game for you. Like, crazy to me.
This is not my thinking. I saw this on Twitter, and I don't know who tweeted it. So if this is you, tag me, quote me, whatever you want to do. Someone said that Derek White put on the wall he had before Connor Wong, and that is fucking insane.
Yeah, it's true.
That's nuts. Rough. Like, this is a guy who has been buns all year. And he's going to make the postseason roster, play game two.
But guess what, Pat?
That's baseball.
What if he hits his first home run of the season in the playoffs against the Yankees?
Seriously, would it surprise you? I don't think it would.
No, it wouldn't. I mean, You know why? Because he's 4-for-10 with a home run off of Rodon.
There you go.
There you go, buddy.
There you go. So, okay, he's Bayo's catcher, and he's a good matchup for Rodon in game two. This dude, so much confidence in him. Let's go.
Wait until I give you my prediction. I'll make you guys feel a lot better.
Okay. Here, if you guys were curious, I went in and dug up the last time the Red Sox faced the Yankees projected starters and the Yankees faced the Red Sox projected starters. I think none of it has actually been announced on MLB.com. So all of this, I believe, is tentative. I'm trying to scroll over to see if that's still correct. No, Crochet and Fried have been announced. Rodon has been announced. That's it. But Cora said he's likely Bayo gets game two. And I think we all know Giolito's getting game three. And I think Cam Schlittler is most likely getting game three for the Yankees. Max Fried in his last start against the Red Sox, 5 1/3, 9 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 6 Ks. Crochet in his last against the Yankees, 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 earned, 1 walk, 12 Ks. Bayo in his last start against the Yankees, this was the Nate Eaton getting thrown out a third game. 5 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks, 4 Ks. Carlos Rodon in his last against the Red Sox, this was Sunday Night Baseball against Dustin May. He was 5 2/3, 1 hit, 2 earned runs, 5 walks, 3 Ks. Sox did not take advantage of the base runners they were getting on the walks. And then the Red Sox have never faced Cam Schlittler, but Giolito's last against the Yankees, 5 2/3, 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 1 walk, 6 Ks. So that's what we're dealing with here. And the Red Sox, obviously 9-4 against the Yankees this year. I think that maybe we buried the lead there, that the Red Sox have taken care of business against the Yankees this year, and they've taken care of business against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium this year. Like, the one series the Yankees won against the Red Sox was at Fenway. And the Red Sox have been, I believe, the best road team in baseball for, I wish I had the stat. I think it's since sometime in mid-June they've been the best road team in baseball, which made me completely flip-flop my take about home versus road. Not flip-flop it, but the need for a home field advantage in the postseason became a little bit less meaningful to me as I was coping with the fact that the Red Sox weren't going to get it.
Yeah, this team is really weird with their home road splits. I think that's kind of a product of being a very young team overall. The consistency all year that's kind of been the bugaboo for these guys it's good and bad. I shouldn't call it a bugaboo. It's not all bad. They're kind of unpredictable. Like, I remember a few times this year we've been previewing series or talking about what's to come, and everything was stacked against the Red Sox, and then we kind of all agreed like, oh, that's why they're going to win, because it makes no sense. And then they play the Pirates at home, and they lose 2 out of 3. So it just really, there hasn't really been consistency. I would prefer, of course, home field advantage, largely in part to the other team having to come to Fenway, not less to do with the Red Sox themselves, more to do with the other team. But I feel really good when these guys are on the road. It feels like they lock in. They're good at blocking out the noise. I don't think they're going to let Yankee Stadium get to them. They have a lot of to go along with the young guys. They do have veterans who have been there. Like, this is where having Bregman is awesome. Having Story is great. Giolito, playoff experience, really useful. So Crochet also, I believe, has like an inning or two.
Yeah, he's pitched. Yeah.
That's bizarre to think about.
White Sox playoff inning, man.
Yeah, those happen sometimes. Crazy to think. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound like a hardo Red Sox fan. I'm just not moved by the new Yankee Stadium. It's not the same fear that I had when I was a fan and the teams used to play at old Yankee Stadium and all the ghosts of everything that had happened there. This Yankee Stadium, they've had a good season, and it was years ago, 2009. And since then, it's been like, I don't know, that building, it just reeks of Yankees disappointment to me. That's what I think of when I see the new building, is just those guys losing and their fans going home sad. So I'm not saying it's going to be like, oh, Red Sox are going to walk these guys. It's going to be an incredibly hard series. The Yankees are good top to bottom, but like, anyone who's telling you they're like, oh, they're screwed, like, I just don't buy it. It's baseball at the end of the day. Sox.
The other thing too is, so you have the road record, which works in their favor. They went 32-20 against the AL East this year. Like, they're very good at scouting the in-division opponents, and it's kind of felt like that. I think, like, the Yankees fans that I know kind of say the same thing. It's the Sox kind of have the book on the Yankees in the terms of the scouting department. Like, they know how to attack guys. They know where the weaknesses are. They know how to exploit the weaknesses. Like, even, like, I think it was last year, 2 years ago. I think it was last year when they stole, like, six bases on Jose Trevino. Like, they find these little cracks in the armor of every team in the AL East. They're kind of – this year is the first year they kind of really put it all together and are able to expose everything. So, and, like, that's where AC comes in. Like, Cora – for them to win the series, you need to win game one, obviously. You can't waste Crochet. And then Cora has to be Cora. Like, you, Cora has to manage laps around Aaron Boone, like he, like, historically has, to be fair. But, like, those are, like, on Sammy, I think you said it. On paper, like, the Yankees are a better team. On paper, this should be a good series. It's those kinds of things where the Red Sox are really going to make up ground and have a chance to win the series. It's the managing. It's the scouting, it's exposing the weaknesses. It's all these tiny little things that hopefully add up for them to advance to the ALDS, beat the Yankees. That's their hope right now.
So I want to get into the lineups. I talked about how we were going to get into that. But before, to set the stage for this, I'm going to give you guys three names, and you're going to pick two of them to make the roster. All right? Nate Eaton, David Hamilton, Nick Sogard. Pick two.
Easy. Actually, this is funny. We spoke about this on radio yesterday with Brad Foe. And I chose, and this wasn't a popular answer, Nate Eaton, you got to bring on. He's been on fire lately, and he crushes lefties. You're probably going to face two lefties to start the first two games against the Yankees. So that's a no-brainer to me. He also backs up Bregman. He's like the only backup third baseman, really. So in case of emergency, you need him as well. I also feel like that guy is very military background. I don't think he's going to be at all rattled by Yankee Stadium. He's very, like eyes on the prize, does not get shook. And then my other one, I'd go Sogard, man. I think you got great speed off the bench with Eaton. Whether he's if he's starting, you don't. But you have other guys with speed off the bench in that case. But I'm saying this because pretty much the only reason Hamilton would be in there would be the speed off the bench. And I think in this scenario, it's way more important to have a Swiss Army knife guy like Sogard who can put the ball in play when you need it, which is funny because he struck out two times in the last game of the season, but we don't have to talk about that. I like his contact game. I think the best example of it is the game where he hit that little ground ball to drive in Nate Eaton to win the game. So that's why I'm thinking Sogard. Also more versatility than Hamilton. I know Hamilton can kind of like fake it at short, but so can Sogard. He can also play third, so it's not just Eaton backing up Bregman in that case. I think that's the way I'd go. That said, that's not a strong lean with Sogard. It's a strong lead with Eaton. Like, I really think he has to be on the roster. With Sogard, it's like 60-40. Like, I slightly prefer him, but if the Red Sox went with Hamilton, I get it, because Eaton's fast, but Hamilton's fast. So it's a good question, because there's no bad answer.
Pat, I can tell by your face when he said it that you're going to say something different here.
Yeah, I'm going to go Eaton, and I'm going to go with Hamilton. And I say that because since Roman has gone down, it's obvious. Like, they've really struggled to get runs across. In the playoffs, you need to get as many runs across in any way, shape, or form that you can. Having Nate Eaton and David Hamilton on the postseason roster just maximizes your ability to play late inning small ball. And Sammy, I agree. Like, Sogard's contact game is super valuable. If you can pinch hit him late in the game, like even in like a game two where maybe you prefer Sogard over Narvaez before Narvaez takes over for Wong kind of thing. Like, I appreciate that. But just based on what the day-to-day lineup looks like, I think the speed is more valuable than the contact. And I think I would lean more so Eaton and Hamilton right now.
That's totally fair. I don't think that's a bad take at all. Like, I actually think you're going to be right in the end. I would just go with Sogard. I think he's... I just love a guy like that off the bench. Like,
well,
I
hold
said,
on, Sammy.
Swiss Army knife.
Let me pause you, because I would take Nick Sogard and I would start him in both the first two games.
Whoa!
Whoa!
Second base?
Yeah. Because okay,
that's
basically
not that crazy. Yeah, Romy at first.
Basically, yeah. The question is, would you rather start Low at first, Romy at second, or Sogard at second, Romy at first? And then if the answer is Sogard at second, then the question becomes, because I've now chosen Eaton and Sogard, so I'm leaving David Hamilton off. But in the lineup I'm going to put out here, I'll read it to you position by position. I didn't make an order. Catcher Narvaez, first base Romy, second base Sogard, shortstop Story, third base Bregman, left field Duran, subject to maybe there's a conversation there. Center field Rafaela, right field Eaton, DH Ref Snyder, which on the bench leaves Wong, Abreu, Yoshida, Lowe. Not a lot of speed there. So then the question becomes, do you put Hamilton on the roster? I mean, you can't take Yoshida off. He's been the best hitter. Do you take Lowe off because you're facing two lefties in the first three games? Or do you just go without the speed option off the bench? Because to me, I think you need those dudes to be able to pinch hit more than you need the pinch runner.
I don't think you can start Duran in game one.
So who would you start over him? I agree. That's a conversation. Who would you start over him?
First of all, the reason I'm saying that, Duran is 0 for 10 with 5 strikeouts versus Fried. He does not, and he has been awful against lefties lately. So I'm...
And he sat against Max Fried last time Fried started.
Yes.
So it's something they've recognized before.
Yeah. So what would I do in the outfield? I'd go Eaton and Ref Snyder on the corners. Don't care which one. Which probably Eaton in right field, slightly better. No, he's a better defender than Ref Snyder. Then Sedan in center.
So who's your DH in that case? You've now put Ref Snyder into the field. Now you've got your options. If it's not Duran, your options for DH in the roster that I just gave you are Wong, Abreu, Yoshida, Lowe. What they did last time was they caught Mayo with Wong and then they DH'd Narvaez. I don't think they're putting Wong in the lineup here.
So Wong is 3 for 6. You're talking game one?
Yeah. Because game two, Wong's going to be catching.
He's 3 for 6 off of Fried, but I can't DH.
How many of that is this year though? Because this year Wong is different than
Fair. Know. I'm not sure how much this year, but I can't. Yeah, I can't do that. My DH
you go Yoshida.
I might just go Yoshida because the hot bat, and you need like I don't want lefties in the lineup as much as possible against Fried, but that'll make it tougher for Boone late in the game if you have Yoshida. And plus, like I said, you ride the hot bat, not to overthink anything. Just put your hot bat in there, put him between some righties, and I think it's not the worst thing in the world. And good contact again.
Pat?
One thing that we have not talked about, which plays tremendously into the whole Hamilton, Sogard, Eaton situation, is what if Marcelo's back?
Oh, he's not going to be back.
It's just defense with him.
He just started taking ground balls. Like he's...
Yeah. You can't put that on him either. That's a tough spot. Tough spot.
Yeah.
Tough spot.
Agreed. So the core quote was throwing me off, but I agree. I would hold him out bare minimum DS if they get there.
I think it's famous last words to say I'm going to die with my guy, which if they put Duran in the lineup, that's the argument for it. Is he's one of the best players on the team. He's one of the leaders of the team. The team has gone on his back for multiple years now. Like he's their dude. But at the same time, if this were a regular season game, good chance he sits it. So why would you change that for the playoffs just because, you could be dead in two games and you want to make sure Duran is in there because you don't want to lose without him in the lineup? Well, as you said, Sammy, he's had a really bad year against left-handed pitching and he's 0 for 10 against Max Fried, you said?
With 5 Ks.
The 5 Ks. So I don't know. I wouldn't fault them for going with Yoshida or even Nathaniel Lowe, who has playoff experience at DH, to then put Ref Snyder in the outfield and move Eaton over to outfield.
Yeah. I don't think if I'm Alex Cora, I would say to Duran, you're not starting today, but you're going to play. So be ready. You're getting in this game at some point. Either you're running, you're pinch hitting, you're going in as a defensive replacement, or you're going to hit the following inning. You're going to play. So don't be all woe is me because you're not in the starting lineup. You're 0 for 10 with 5 Ks against this guy. We don't want to put... I'm the manager. I'm Alex Cora. I'm making sure I'm not putting my guys in a disadvantageous spot. Praise me. I'm Alex Cora again.
Pat, I'm trying to gather where I'm at with this. If would you start Duran against Fried?
No, I wouldn't. I would, weirdly enough, I think I, maybe not with the whole just coming off the IL. I think I would lean starting Willier over Duran. The last month or so against lefties, Duran has looked completely and utterly lost. Like he's put up non-competitive at-bats. So to me, I would probably lean not playing him, and then I would bat Romy leadoff. I'd put Ref in left field, Sedan in center, Willier in right. And then the second they go to the pen, obviously Duran in for Ref. But that's just, I haven't seen enough from Duran lately. It really is. What have you done for me lately in this business of postseason baseball? And against lefties, it really hasn't been much. Jaron has not looked good against lefties. And it's now's not the time to hope and pray he gets going against lefties. You have to maximize your opportunity because we've been saying it all episode. You need runs, and this offense has struggled to do so since the Roman went down. So to me, no, you cannot start Jaron game one. He'll play, but you cannot start him.
So I was thinking about the Willier thing. He's 3-for-21 since he came back. To put him in there against, to be honest, either of the first two guys, I feel like would be a pretty big risk.
Sammy? 3-for-21, and one of the hits was like a pop-up that dropped. Yeah. So it's not really a good, it's more like two, but technically three. He hasn't looked, he's looked like a guy who missed a month and got thrown back in. It's kind of,
no rehab.
Yeah, what do you do? It's that's probably the toughest. Like, is he gonna? He might not get in unless this goes three games, or well, like maybe defensive replacement.
That could be another argument. It may seem insane, but it's a three-game series that is that where game three isn't guaranteed. If he's not going to start either of the first two games, couldn't you make the argument to put David Hamilton on the? But then again, you're going to want him to pinch hit. Like I keep going in these circles. I
Will
do
you
think pinch? Yeah.
Well, he can't pitch hit. Remember? He's like 0 for 10 his career pinch hitting. Not a good pinch hitter.
Yeah.
And he's ice cold right now.
I get it. Yeah. But like, you would trust Willie pinch hitting over like Nate Eaton against a righty.
Right now?
Dude, come on.
Dude, it's Willier. It's not Willier. It's, I'm still getting up to speed. I haven't played in a month. I'm too.
Right, but you never know when that 21. Could click. That could click that's at any true. Moment.
Right, and that's why it's such a hard decision. But you could make the argument to leave him off, which sounds nuts. You could. And if you leave a guy off, and then you fake an injury to someone, whoever you fake an injury to can't play in the next round. Mm-hmm. So like you can't just do that either. You can't be smart about it.
No. Yeah, you. That's the same thing with the pitching decisions. Like if you're going to have a pitcher on the roster, you got to be prepared to pitch him, and you can't be prepared to bring a guy onto the roster for a quote unquote injury, because then you might need that guy in the next series and you can't use him. Like I don't even know if we're going to have time on this episode to talk about pitchers who we think are going to be on versus off the roster. We probably don't, so maybe we just talk about it in generalities. It's the same 26-man roster. But you don't need to have a rotation of five starting pitchers. You have a rotation of three starting pitchers, which essentially means you get to add two dudes to the bullpen. And obviously those dudes can be the starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. So, but then again, you're also subtracting one because you were on a 28-man roster. So yes. You're going down to 26. But you do basically get to add a guy to your bullpen.
Yeah, I think you got to add Kyle Harrison. I've loved him in short bursts. I think he's looked good. He looked good for three innings the other night, fell apart down the stretch on Friday night, but you're not going to need him for more than one or two, probably in the playoffs. Maybe if you're ahead by a lot or behind by a lot, maybe he gives you an extra one, but I feel like he earned a spot there, and I feel like Connelly Early has too, and I think out of the three of the young lefties, Foley by far has the highest ceiling, but right now, I don't think I'd put him in there.
Okay, we'll be quick with this, but just yes, you guys, Zach Kelly has earned a spot on the roster.
Yes,
yeah,
I agree. So that means you're picking three out of Toley, Murphy, Early, Harrison. I think is the way it's going to be here. I think you're picking three out of those four guys to make the roster. And to be honest with you, like maybe it's fence riding here, but like I don't entirely. I don't have a strong opinion there. Like whoever you take is going to be there designed to be a long guy. Like if Crochet gets blasted and you're down 8-0 in the fifth inning, then you're going to basically want one guy to eat this game so that you don't have to use your guys and then essentially guarantee that if you're going to win the series, you're going to be relying on dudes pitching back to back to back days. That's not really setting yourself up for success. But
yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't have a strong lean. The guys I just mentioned, Early and Harrison, is where those are the two I'd go with. But I mean, Murph has looked really good at times this year, and he can give you multiple innings. He's a guy who might have a future as a starter, so he's probably going to want to go multiple innings. None of them make you feel amazing, and none of them are like, oh God, this guy can't be, this is friggin' Drew Pomeranz in the 2018 World Series where you can't even use the guy. Like that's, none of them are like that, but none of them are making you feel fantastic.
Can I ask you guys a question? Because I know we have to move on to predictions, but let me ask you guys a question. Would you feel confident pitching Connelly early in a tight game?
No, in the playoffs?
Like, let's say, in the situation I'm suggesting here is like, let's say Giolito goes 3 innings, 5 runs, but the Red Sox got 4, 5, 6 runs on the board. Would you feel confident pitching Connelly early for 2 innings in that scenario or no?
Yes. No way, dude. Confident? I mean, I don't think, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, he's screwed, but nah, he's pitched, what, 4 big league games? No fucking way I'd feel confident. That's terrifying.
Okay. Wrong answer. Because obviously you're not going to feel confident, but like, is it a decision you would make even though you're going to be uncomfortable with it? Because someone has to pitch those innings. Pat?
I wouldn't say confident, but I mean, yeah, I would feel totally fine with it. I mean, I would feel way more comfortable with Early right now than Toley. I'd feel way more comfortable with Early right now than Harrison. Of those four, I think Murph is one, and then Early, and then Harrison, and then Toley.
Yeah, it's like the more I think about it, the more Murph actually sounds like maybe he's the move. Just the experience alone. Like, Connelly, Early's he's a fucking child. He's a child. You want to put him in that
spot?
And
maybe he starts the first game of the division series if you get there. So if you pitch him here, maybe you can't do that.
That's true.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is of the four, Murph is the only one who's actually seen leverage innings this year. Toley came in like either multi-run losses or multi-run wins. Early obviously has started. Harrison has kind of been up for a little bit more than a cup of coffee right now. But Murph has come in like high leverage spots and seemingly delivered pretty much every time. I think Murph has.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Has to be a lock, I feel like, unless Bernie's ready. Different conversation, but yeah.
The other question, yeah, I saw him throwing. I don't think he's going to be ready. But the other question is like Connelly Early hasn't pitched out of the bullpen, and you're going to have him do that for the first time in Yankee Stadium in a postseason game. And if the answer is no, then he's the answer of who you're leaving off the roster, and you're saving him for the next series to start game one if you get there. Obviously, there's going to be questions if they get bounced and it's because they didn't pitch. And it's like, well, Connelly Early's been so good for you guys. Like, how did you leave that weapon in the drawer? But at the same time, he also pitched on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
You know,
so like, he may not even be ready to go.
Your phrasing made me think of something. You talk about leaving, would you say, leave that weapon in the drawer?
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, I know you know. It's Bradfo's favorite quote about what Cora said. What Cora said. In 2018, when the front office was saying they want to leave Joe Kelly off the playoff roster, Cora said, you don't leave 100 miles an hour in the closet. Peyton Toley hit 100 multiple times his last outing. I wouldn't put him on the roster, but I don't think it's crazy to think maybe Alex Cora wants him there, because that fastball, that's an elite big league fastball already. The reason it's getting hit is because the secondaries aren't there. But that fastball, I don't know. You could talk yourself into it.
I think I'd probably put him on the roster.
Totally.
I think he, out of the four dudes that we listed, is probably the best suited for if you are going to try to get through a game with everyone eating one inning. I probably trust Toley for one inning more than I trust any of the other three dudes that we just said. And so one of the other guys, one or two of the other guys for a one inning burst. Yeah. If I need Harrison three innings, just, like, give me Harrison.
Harrison's got 200 big league innings under his belt. People talk about him like he's a rookie, but he's pitched plenty. That means something to me.
I agree. And, yeah, 100%. And
he's got the biggest nostrils on the team.
He does. Yeah. No, I don't think I would. I think right now, and this is going to change a million times, I'd probably leave early off and just trust that you can get through it, and you set yourself up with a game one starter because you're going
to
need it.
Dude, to be honest, you're kind of convincing me to join your side with the early thing simply because of that game four thing. You're not going to need a game four guy. You're going to need him for the next series. And if he's never pitched out of the bullpen, he's only pitched a handful of big league games, where's the spot for him? Why? What's the argument for him over Murph other than, oh, he's been pitching well lately? Which is not a bad argument, but that's it.
This episode is presented by State Farm. Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. It's like expecting the leadership of a team captain on the football field, but getting a C captain. You wouldn't settle for just anything for your team. Shouldn't it be the same for your insurance? So don't settle for just any insurance when you can go with a leader. State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Should we do predictions?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's jump right in.
All right. Let's start with Sammy. Sammy, give me the positive prediction. I already know just from the conversation what we're all going to say, but let's be quick with it because we're running short on time. But Sammy, what's your prediction for the series?
What do you guys think I'm going to say?
I think you're going to say the Sox win it in three.
Okay. I think the Sox win it in two. Here's why. So obviously Red Sox 9-4 against the Yankees this season. Max Fried, 20 playoff games, 5-1 ERA. Bregman owns him. Eaton's 2-for-3. Romy's 2-for-7. Carlos Narvaez, 3-for-6. Story has 2 home runs. Even Connor Wong is 3-for-6. Crochet, 3-0 against the Yankees with a 3.29 ERA this year. That's 27.1 innings. That's a pretty big sample for a head-to-head. Only Rosario, Bellinger, Stanton hit him well. Judge is 3-for-15 with 11 strikeouts against Garrett Crochet. Yes, he had that one home run, which admittedly was pretty sick. But other than that, he's done nothing against him. So I think that matchup's great. The other guy who hits decently well against Crochet is Volpe. Please, please, Aaron Boone, put Volpe at shortstop in a playoff game. I fucking wish. What's up?
Doesn't Rosario hit Crochet really hard?
Rosario
really
owns
hard.
Crochet.
Really
that,
hard.
That's like the Enrique Wilson equivalent of so, but that's it. The other guys I listed, Bellinger too, but Stanton, he's 2-for-7, but I wanted to give him credit because, that's something off Crochet. And
it's
then
also Garrett Crochet. He's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Volpe's similar, but Rosario, complete butcher in the field as well. So, I like that matchup. I also think the Yankees are just prone to pooping their pants. This is not your early 2000s serial killer mindset Yankees. Game two, Rodon, 6 games in the playoffs, 6.64 ERA. That sucks. Ref Snyder owns him, 6-for-17 with a bomb. Sedan's got a home run off him. Wong, who's going to be starting, 4-for-10 with a bomb off of him. Bregman is only 4-for-17, but he's seen him a ton. I love that. Narvaez probably won't be starting, but he's 3-for-6 off of him. Then you have Bayo, pitched 19 innings, 4 earned runs. That's a 1.89 ERA against the Yankees this year. He's been a Yankee killer in the past. And on top of everything I've said, the Yankees defense. Again, I'm going to reference Joe Kelly a second time. Brad Foe, I hope you're listening. Just put the ball in play, and these guys will shit down their leg, just like they did in the World Series. Aaron Judge dropping the ball, Volpe doing Volpe things. Austin Wells could definitely throw a ball into center field if you run on him. I just don't. This Yankees team is good. I'm not saying they're not good. I don't think it's a good matchup for them. And I haven't even mentioned the managerial mismatch from hell for the Yankees. Good luck. Aaron Boone versus Alex Cora. Like, mismatch. I'm sorry. So, matchup-wise, defensively, managerially, I think the Red Sox have the advantage. I don't think it's a big advantage. I just picked them in both of those games to win. If it goes 3, I wouldn't be shocked. But I think these are going to be close games. But I'm taking the Red Sox by a smidge in both of them. All 3 of them. Take that. Oh, and by the way, if it does get to game 3, Cam Schlittler probably pitching for the Yankees, right? He's been awesome. But would you feel good with a rookie on the mound with your season on the line in any scenario, unless it's like Paul Skenes? I certainly wouldn't. That's a tough spot to put anyone in. So I think Red Sox win 2 games and that's it. No game 3.
Pat, what do you got?
I think the Yankees win in 3. I think the Sox win the crochet start. Based on, it's literally just vibe. Just based on what I've seen off of Giolito in Bayo the last month, has not been good. Bayo, his last 3 starts, 5 innings, 4 innings, 5 innings, walks were 3 walks, 2 walks, 3 walks, earned runs 2, 3, 4. So he's not going deep. The command's not there. He's kind of getting lucky with the limited damage in a sense. The command's spotty. He just hasn't really looked great. We talked about it last or 2 episodes ago. We really wanted to see more out of him going into the playoffs, and he just frankly didn't deliver. And then Giolito's more or less the same. His last 3, 4 2/3, 4 1/3, 5 2/3. He is so good at limiting damage. That being said, he's not great or hasn't been great lately of not putting himself in really, really bad situations. He's another one too. The command has been real bad lately. Last start, 4 walks. Start before that, 5 walks. He's not striking guys out, and he's not really a big strikeout guy, but though between those two, the command's just, it's not where I want it to be. They're not sure. It's, again, I said it earlier. What have you done for me lately? The 2 of those guys have not done a ton of good lately. You're away in the Bronx. It's a scary environment, but it's not, you know, Arrowhead in the NFL or Gillette with Brady, but it's still, you're away in a very, very strong fan base's environment. I think there's a lot going against them, but they have Crochet. They have the managerial edge in Cora. Luckily, the way the lineup is right now with Roman out and just kind of how injuries piled up, they're tailor-made to hit lefties, which gives them a really good shot of winning the series. But I don't think the pitching's where it needs to be right now.
So mine, it's coming with the caveat that it's playoff baseball and predictions are useless and literally anything can happen. And we've seen bad teams make the playoffs and make it to the World Series. We've seen Red Sox teams that are great win the World Series. And we've seen Red Sox teams that are a culmination of weird talent win the World Series and make it far in the playoffs, like 21 and 13, of course. That said, like, you look at this series on paper, I think you see the Red Sox win the first game and then drop the next 2. And I hope I'm wrong. Yankees have won 7 in a row and 10 of their last 11. Like, this isn't like they're limping into the playoffs like they have in the past. And the Red Sox, we've seen, I think, what, not counting the last 2, I mean, even if you wanted to count the last 2 games, they're 500 in their last 14 and 16 games. If you don't count the last 2, it's still 500. Like, this is a group that can go into Yankee Stadium and can win the series, and they're going to be prepared to do it. Like, I trust no one else managing this team more than Cora. And we've seen these guys take care of business when the games matter, when it's the Yankees. So, like, I really do hate doing the predictions, but I can't be honest. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the Red Sox are going to, you know, like I'm not going to sit here and lie just because we're a Red Sox fan driven podcast and I want the Red Sox to win. Like I'm going to tell you how I actually feel. And I just feel like this Yankee team is healthier. They've got a lineup built to hit in that ballpark. They hit the ball out of the ballpark, and hitting the ball out of the ballpark is really easy to do at Yankee Stadium. They've got really good pitching. Sox, if hopefully the extra rest for their starters helps, but there's a lot working against them, and they sure as shit can do it, and I hope they do it, but it would be like a 55-45, I think the Yankees take 2 out of 3 in this. Like it's playoff baseball and anything can happen. And, you know, I feel like predictions are way easier to make in the regular season because it can kind of feel scripted because you can look at the pitching matchups. You can look at how teams have been trending, but like everything changes when you get to the postseason. So we could easily get into the playoffs and see the Red Sox stomp all over the Yankees. We could also see the Yankees completely overmatch the Red Sox, and nothing would surprise me because it's playoff baseball and anything can happen, but we're doing predictions. That's my prediction. I hope I'm wrong.
Me too.
Any quick enough seds? Cause we are really long. So if we got enough seds really fucking quick,
go ahead.
All right. All I was going to say is I hate that these games are at 6 o'clock. I think that's stupid as fuck. Put them at 7. Like we don't need, it's okay if the games overlap a little bit, like for the love of God, give people time to get home from work. Hell, for the Yankee fans' sake, give them time to go to the stadium. But like, yeah, 6 o'clock sucks. I hate that. It's not a big game. Not a big game time.
Okay. So I quickly want to make a funny comment. I saw Bob Nightingale tweeted about the Tigers collapse, which, you know, they still made the playoffs. He called it the worst collapse in like MLB history, something like that. And I jokingly tweeted, congrats to the 2011 Red Sox. You're off the hook. Dude, no. The 2011 Red Sox, way worse. Way, way, way worse. People thought I was serious. I was like, okay, I thought this was pretty clearly sarcastic. Like that, they missed the playoffs. The Tigers are in. They popped champagne last night. Like that's, it sucks. They lost first place and now they have to play an extra round. Like that's embarrassing. And it was a bad collapse. But 2011 Red Sox, go YouTube 2011 Red Sox fans if you don't agree with me, and try to tell, the last night of that season was like a horror movie with the Yankees. So Red Sox lose on a walk-off. Robert Andino, Carl Crawford dives, can't catch it. Papelbon blows it. Game over. And then you have to switch to Yankees at Rays. And you're a Red Sox fan, you have to root for the Yankees. So you're rooting for the Yankees to save your season. And then they blow it on a walk-off. And it's like a historic walk-off for the Rays. Not close. Not close at all. Put the kibosh on that right now. Tigers collapse, bad. 2011 Red Sox, 1,000 times worse.
Sammy, then, where would you say the Mets collapse? Because the Mets didn't make it. And they were, at one point, had the best record one of the best records, I think, in the National League.
The best.
Are you putting baseball in June, I think, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, what was it? Where do you put them?
So I think that needs some nuance because it is true they definitely collapsed. But on paper, I thought that was the most overrated team in baseball from the jump. I thought it was so insane. Talk about a narrative getting out of control with very little backing. Dave Stearns gets hired by the Mets. Everyone's like, this guy's unbelievable. This guy, look what he did in Milwaukee. I'm like, yeah, he was solid in Milwaukee, but why are we talking about this guy like he's friggin' Dave Dombrowski? Like the shit people were saying about him was insane. Like, sure, if I were a team, totally cool having him as GM. I think he'd do a good job, but that's where it stops. Then he gets the Soto thing done. Him and Steve Cohen get that done. Everyone's praising the Mets, rightfully so. They went out there and they spent money. They got the biggest free agent on the market. That's friggin' awesome. Congrats. And then they get Manaea. Great. Some depth. He's good. He was good last year. Kind of overperformed. Whatever. Still good to have. And that's it. Clay Holmes, whatever. Their rotation was like Kodai Senga, Clay Holmes, Manaea. And then they're like,
Griffin, oh, we have Canning.
Canning, who they're like, we'll fix this guy. He's got a gold glove. And who
he was
else?
Great.
Yeah, for like a minute. And then Patterson or whatever, he was good for a little bit. But like, look at that team on paper. How could you look at that team and say, that's a good team? They're going to go deep in the playoffs. I thought that was fucking crazy the entire time. So I'm less surprised that that team melted down. I'm sure it was just as painful for those fans. But the 2011 Red Sox, That was like an all-star team, top to bottom, on paper, of course. Like Gonzalez, Crawford, Papelbon, all this pitching staff, Big Poppy. Like, look at that team. Veritek was still there. Bullpen was deep. Like, it not the same. Francona, like, just not the same. Not at all the same.
Yeah, definitively at the absolute highest, third worst collapse. There was 2011. 2007 Mets was real bad. 2007 Mets had a 7-game lead in the division with 17 games left. They went 5-12, lost the division to the Phillies. And that was another team that was unreal. That was David Wright, Jose Reyes, Beltran. Like, that team was loaded.
One more from Tom Karen. He actually jumped in on this conversation. Shout out TC. He referenced the 1978 Red Sox, 14-game lead over the Yankees. And then they eliminated the Red Sox, the Yankees did, in game 163. So
there's Bucky Dent, yeah.
Yeah. So that one is, yeah, Bucky bleeping Dent, dude. I was just out of college back in those days. So, yeah, not jokes aside, like way before all of our times. But, yeah, shout out TC. Thanks for chiming in.
Pat?
I do have one. Shout out Al Horford. You will be missed. It's weird because he more or less, like, unofficially signed with the Warriors, like, 2 months ago, but never actually signed. So when I saw the notification today, it was just weird because I've already come to terms with it. But shout out Al, man. Love Al. He's like the picture-perfect Celtic. Was never the best player on the team, but he's just great team guy. Starter pretty much every year he was here. Yeah, dude. I fucking love Al.
It takes a lot for a Celtic who left the team for the rival Sixers and the team that beat you in the finals in the Warriors, and for me to still love him. So, yeah, shout out Al. That's going to do it for Play Tessie episode 270. Remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Remember to rate 5 stars and find us on WEI's YouTube channel. You can find the Play Tessie episodes in the Play Tessie playlist. Hit the thumbs up on all of those videos. Remember to subscribe to WEI on YouTube. Then you can find Play Tessie on all the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. All right, here we go. We'll see you guys soon. We're gonna be doing episodes throughout this series and hopefully the series going forward, but got to take it one game at a time. So we will see you. Game one coming up Tuesday, 6:08 p.m. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.